This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
Our first film is, of course, a documentary. It is Free Solo. It details the journey of rock climber Alex Honnold on his mission to climb the El Capitan cliff face in Yosemite National Park. I had to be really careful of pronunciations there. It's not just about that, really. It's also a character study, I'd say.
And it's about the sport in general. Well, sport, whatever you call it.
And it's also, we were talking about before the show, about the ethics of documentary filmmaking, because the crew almost become a part of the story, and that's something I really liked about this, was the way they were so seamlessly incorporated into the events, especially in terms of, like, some of the camera operators were his friends. So that made the possibility of anything bad happening even more nerve-wracking. And the stakes are even higher for him. And we see how that pressure is, like, put on him during the film.
Yeah, yeah.
A rock climber friend even says to him, don't let the pressure of doing this film make you do something that you've changed your mind about doing. So just to let the audience know, who has seen this?
I have.
I have.
I haven't.
And you haven't, Lizzie. Now, you don't really want to see this anyway, is that right?
No, because I don't really like heights. So this didn't sound like my kind of thing.
It does play with that quite a bit. It's well aware that a lot of the audience are going to be very nervous at parts, and it uses that to its advantage for tension.
Yeah, but I don't think overly so. It's not like, oh, we're trying to make this as nerve-shredding as possible sort of thing. This is still quite an uplifting film, a positive film about, you know, pursuing your dreams and what you want to achieve in life.
He does explore some of the more negative sides of his personality, I think.
Yeah, I think 100%, yeah.
Specifically, we'll jump to this. We're going to leave this for later, but we'll talk about his relationship with his girlfriend, Sunny, in the film. That's a big... I don't think without her and without the filmmakers being a part of it, especially without her, this wouldn't be a cinematic experience. Now, what I mean by that is, of course, the cinematography will still be great, but without that relationship and without the filmmakers, this might as well have been a five-part series on YouTube or something. Yeah.
As much as I really enjoyed the documentary, there were parts that did feel like it was for National Geographic. Like, it would be a good thing you'd find on, you know, National Geographic on TV, but there were parts where I'm like, this feels like it's made not for cinemas.
I think what makes it work for cinema is the characters.
Cinematography wise and how it's visually presented.
When you say like National Geographic, do you mean like because of the setting of it being Yosemite Park, or do you mean like in the way that like the quality of the editing and the camera,
infographic sort of stuff?
Yeah, that's what I mean specifically.
I quite liked that because
they're not bad at all.
It pull out from a shot into a composed image of the mountain, and it would show the route up, you know, in like dotted.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, like that. It's not that I think it's bad.
Yeah, so that's more of a TV.
I actually quite liked to do it.
Yeah, it was well done. It's just
it's educational in terms of, you know, the point that he gets to at specific points, you know sort of like the time scale and how he's doing sort of like compared to other people and if he's on track, and it's all about methodical ways of doing a free solo. Yeah, because I knew basically nothing about free soloing before. I thought it was just normal rock climbing, but yeah, it really
is.
That's
where he's going up completely smooth surfaces and how they're supposed to navigate that. Is
I thought it was really interesting the where they explain the boulder problem, which is sort of like where there's just a bit that's just have genuinely nothing for you to grab hold of, and the only part is like a small thumb grip sort of thing. The whole thing.
To explain to Lizzie and the audience, is a really difficult part of the route where it's like jutted out part of the mountain. You have two ways up. You have one which is like sliding up a glass wall. I think it's called the Teflon corner or something.
Okay.
And then we have the boulder problem, which is where there's a gap between one part where you can climb and another part where you can climb, and you have to either do a very intricate sequence to get across this gap, or you jump.
Yeah, it's a karate kick, isn't it?
The karate kick is the difficult, like, manoeuvring one,
yeah.
And the jump one, he actually shows us him failing at one point when he has the rope.
Mm.
So, needless to say, he doesn't do the jump one when he's free soloing.
Yeah. He gets injured for it.
He has to do a karate. Yeah, he has to do a karate kick. We're just holding on with just one single thumb.
He has to switch his hand over to the gap.
He's switching while kicking.
Even
over
when he has the rope on, like, I don't understand.
Even though you know he lives to tell the tale, and you know there's good video, interesting interviews with him after what he did, you still feel that tension because a line I remember him saying is like, It's like if I succeed, it's like I won the Olympic gold. But if I don't win the Olympic gold, I die. Because he has very little emotion. Because he needs to be...
let's talk about that. So you did bring up the part where he gets injured. And both the times he's injured, he's climbing with his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't shy away from that at all. Both him and some of the people they interview make a point of saying, oh, both times he's been injured, he's been climbing with his less experienced girlfriend.
That was one thing, the thing I disliked most about the documentary.
That's something I disliked about the person.
Yeah, it made him out to be too poisonous at times. Yeah. So it's like, oh, as soon as I tore something in my back or something, I just wanted to break up with her.
Yeah, sort of thing.
Think like, come on, man.
They do show his background and he's
a very cold person by nature, but to be fair,
he doesn't have to be completely. Yeah. He's not the nicest of people, to be honest. Even though he is a fascinating person.
He was never hugged when he was growing up, and he makes a point of telling the filmmakers he had to sort of teach himself how to hug. And we see when he's with his girlfriend's family, he says to her, "I don't see the point in holidays. I don't like being told when to have fun." And I'm like, that's actually a really fair point. And you can see what kind of cold upbringing he had, if that's his perspective on holidays. I think he's a fascinating person. He's far from a bad guy. He gives like a third of his income to charity.
No, it's a flaw. I don't think he's a bad person.
Yeah, it's a non-profit as well.
That's what makes it such a good character study, because he's a flawed guy, and he can be quite cold and quite direct, but he does explain how he has to be. Yeah. We are going to go to a break now, but first, do we recommend this film, starting with Isaac?
I highly recommend Free Solo. I think it's very deserving of winning Best Documentary at the Oscars. I think its greatest achievement is, even though it's a true story and you know what happens at the end, you know, he lives to tell the tale, you still feel that suspense when he's climbing. And it is interesting, the subject matter, if you don't know what it's about, really just anyone, I mean, I recommend anyone to Free Solo, especially in cinemas.
Joseph?
Yeah, I'd recommend this film for sure. I think if there's any documentary that should have been in the best cinematography category, this would be it. And I like the way that...
IMAX worthy.
Yeah, exactly. And I sort of like the way that they make it about filmmaking as well. So even if you don't get or you don't like these kind of things, it makes you nervous sort of thing, there's a different standpoint where you can watch and read this film.
And Lizzie, have we changed your mind at all?
I don't know. I'm definitely interested in it, and I do like seeing how masterful these kind of things can be. My issue with heights might keep me away from it.
I definitely recommend this film as well. Definitely the best choice for best documentary winner. And now it's time for our classic film. I can introduce us if you want. No worries. Fargo is a film written and directed by the now very well-known Coen brothers. It plays a bit around with the idea of a protagonist, because we first follow the unravelings of a very intricate crime committed by William H. Well, sort of committed by William H. Macy's character, which he's an accomplice to. And the film, if you've never seen it before, will set you up to think that he's going to be the main character. But then the actual crime occurs, and we skip forward to our real protagonist, Frances McDormand's Marge Gunderson, who is an officer in the small town, which I can't remember the name of, not Fargo, which is barely in the film.
It's in Minnesota.
It's in Minnesota. And we see how she solves that, in the sense that she sort of has her worldview changed a bit. The film starts off for her, from her perspective, as being very innocent. She's barely fazed by the actual crime itself.
Mm.
But as it goes on, we see just what people are really capable of, which is something I love about the film, how it explores that. And I think that works as an introduction. We are going to go around the circle a bit to start with. And Lizzie, what did you think of it?
Oh, I love Fargo.
Yeah.
Like, the first time I saw it, I genuinely probably watched it like 3 times in 1 week. I just had to keep watching it. It was just one of those films for me. I just really loved it.
It really does hook you in. Like, the dialogue especially is something which always pops into my mind.
Yeah.
Not only because of how well it portrays the area in a very detailed way, but also in the sense that it's so well written. There's no wasted dialogue in this film. Even casual conversations get across character motivations.
Mm.
Mm.
Isaac, have you seen Fargo?
Yeah, I've seen Fargo.
What do you think?
It's good.
It's good?
Yeah.
Are you much of a Coen Brothers fan?
I do like the Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
I haven't seen as many as I wish I did, but I did. Most Coen Brothers movies I've seen, I really liked or loved.
They're pretty great. Now, Joseph, if you haven't seen Fight
Apologies, Club. No, I haven't. Quite like Coen Brothers too, right?
Which movies of theirs do you like really like? Is all that stand out for you?
I don't know. It's sort of like, I think Big Lebowski's probably up there.
Yeah. Same. That's their greatest.
It's quintessential Coen, is that is. But then on the other scale, No Country for Old Men is another classic. So.
Serious Man, I think, is pretty underrated. And it's one of their best.
I haven't even seen that.
I don't think I've seen that one.
I still need to see Hail Caesar.
Oh.
I didn't like Hail Caesar.
I did see mixed reviews.
Not bad.
Yeah, I think maybe it just wasn't my cup of tea.
Alden Ehrenreich's great in that film, though. So
he is really good in that. Yeah.
Now, of course, this one has a pretty great protagonist in Marge Gunderson. She is more like a real police officer than you would have seen in movies in the late 90s. Even though it's in a world where the dialogue can be very witty and engaging.
Things can be very, outrageous and ridiculous.
Yeah, it still feels very real. Like, these actually feel like people, and you wouldn't have seen that at the time. This is something which made it stand out so much when it was first released. Now, Lizzie, what do you think of Marge Gunderson as a protagonist?
I love Marge. Like, she is one of my favourite protagonists in film, I think, really. I just love her kind of, you were talking about it, that she kind of has her worldview changed, and she sort of does, but I also think she's just optimistic in some ways.
Yeah, she sticks to her guns.
Yeah, literally in some cases. But she manages to kind of, I don't know, I think she manages to kind of deal with her job and her life in a sort of separate way and a sort of non-separate way at the same time. Like, she can separate the violence away and still have optimism. Because, like, it's fairly obvious, you know, she's pregnant throughout the whole film. And I think what I really like that about her, because I think there's so many tired police officer tropes where they witness really horrible crimes and they get into this very like sort of tired deadbeat, the world's terrible, how can anybody, you know, like literally the how can anybody bring up a child in this world argument, and that's exactly what Marge is going to do. So I really like that optimism.
I'm thinking of media actually that I actually like to have those cliches.
Sorry.
It's like, oh, that's like, that's just the whole first series of True Detective.
That's true, actually. I did enjoy that, but I always like when there's a deviation.
Have you seen the Fargo TV show?
No.
I really tried to get into it, but I'll be honest, I think it's too much quirkiness for a TV series for me.
The first season was really good.
Yeah.
I will say that much. I did quite enjoy that.
I think I love the quirkiness in like the 90-minute segment, because like, I mean, like, everyone's going to come out of this film and be like, yeah, you betcha. Like, all that kind of like Midwestern stuff. You know, but I think when you try to kind of push that for a whole series, I don't know whether it just becomes a bit tired for me personally. Maybe I'll go back and give it another go, because everyone really does like it.
Now, we were talking about how a worldview is challenged a bit. Do you remember the character of Mike Yanagita?
Vaguely.
The person she meets in a restaurant.
Oh,
old friend of hers.
Yes.
Now, at first, you might not pick up like why that's so important. Now, it's a very awkward scene, to say the least.
Yeah.
But it's so important to the story. I didn't pick up why at first. Then I thought about it, and it's what makes her realise that a certain character is lying.
Yeah.
Because she's so optimistic, she sees the best in people, and that actually works against her at one point. Then when it's revealed that, I can spoil this, it's minor spoiler, that Mike Yanagita is lying about what he's talking about, that makes her rethink everything that she understands about people and her own judge of character.
It's also because she's in like the setting as well, because something I noticed from the last time, just thinking about Fargo, there's a lot of food in it. I think the tones is one of the best usages.
The tone is so well balanced. I'll skip ahead a bit to talking about Steve Buscemi's character. He's so good. He's funny, but he's very sinister at the same time.
Just such a motor mouth.
Just funny looking guy.
He's twice described like that. Yeah. 12 times the police officer has to ask, what does that even mean? And they're like, oh, you're so funny looking.
Funny looking, yeah.
Love you, Buscemi.
So we were talking about the tone, and the tone is pretty great. It balances this sort of farcical comedy with dark humour and then moments of real tragedy. I think if you have to commend the writing on anything, as well as dialogue, it's got to be the tone, and it rightfully won best screenplay at the Oscars.
I think in terms of endings, I think the Coen brothers are one of the best people who do endings. And one of my all-time favorite endings in cinema is The Big Lebowski.
Outside the bow now.
Yeah, because it's just the perfect ending to a movie.
That's a good one.
And Fargo is kind of similar, because it's like what Marty says, like paraphrasing, like, oh, you did all this to Peter Stormare's character, you did all this for just a bit of money.
Yeah, that and conversation in the car.
Like this whole web of conspiracy in the film, it just amounts to not much. And it's similar to The Big Lebowski, because there's so many in that film, there's so many subplots not concluded. but thematically it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So they're good comparison.
But it's not even that tired, like, oh, you did this all for money kind of thing. She's genuinely horrified by it. Like, you can really see she's just like, I just don't understand it, and you can just see it on her face. She's like, I just don't get it.
How much money was it? It was about a million.
80,000.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Peter Stormare didn't even know it was a million. He thought it was just for 80,000 when he did what he did at the end. And like I was saying, there was no wasted dialogue. It's a great example of a movie where you completely get each of the characters very soon after meeting them.
Yeah,
that's what Coen Brothers' greatest skills is, that even their minor characters or characters appear in one scene, everyone remembers them.
So, just to wrap up a bit, what do we... Final thoughts and of this film, and you know, do we recommend it? And we're going to start with Isaac.
Yeah, I would recommend Fargo. I think it's higher tier Coen Brothers. I think it's not one of my all-time personal favorites.
Coen Brothers ranking.
Well, I'll just say Big Lebowski's number one, No Country for Old Men's number two, and A Serious Man would be number three. That's just like my top three favorites. Yeah. But I think Fargo would be like in the top five for me. I'm trying to think of another Coen Brothers film. But yeah, if you're a Coen Brothers fan, you most likely have seen Fargo. But for anybody, I'd recommend it.
Lizzie?
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, I love Fargo. Like, I just completely fell in love with it. I think the cinematography is fantastic. Roger obviously Deakins. Done by Roger Deakins, who we all love. I love Marge Gunderson as a character so much. If you want to go see like a good female character in cinema, I really strongly recommend going to watch Marge Gunderson. Yeah, I just love her. It's just a lot of fun. And horror at the same time. Not horror, but like, you know, there's a horror to it, but it's a lot of fun. And just for fun, just like sort of double feature it with The Big Lebowski, just to kind of watch the difference between Peter Stormare's character and Steve Buscemi's character. Because you go from kind of, Steve Buscemi goes from being a motor mouth to saying nothing.
So let's solve the mystery of why Joseph has never seen
it. I just didn't get time to see it, to be fair. I wanted to, but I'll definitely check it out in the near future.